No, we'll start at 7. That's fine. We'll start at 7. We will start at 7. The tie into the parsha, the topic that we're going to deal with, is the first source on the source sheets, available up front next to the drinks, where the Parsha Pinchas, after the episode of Pinchas and that act of zealotry that occurs in Parsha Pinchas, where Pinchas takes the law into his own hands and extrajudiciously kills Cusbi and Zimri. Afterwards, there's a couple of other episodes that are discussed, and then a bulk of the end of the Parsha deals with Karbano, various sacrifices that are brought, and in the mix of those, for instance, one of the famous Karbanot that are brought on days other than weekdays, Shabbos and Rosh Chodesh and holidays, is the Karban Musaf, which literally means the additional Karban. Right? So you have the additional Karban of the Karban Musaf, and the Pasuk says that the Musaf Karban is offered Milvat Olat HaBoker Asher LeOlat HaTamid Tasu Et Eleh, that you shall offer these up, shall offer these Musaf Karbanot up, which is offered besides the burnt offering. Milvat Olat HaBoker Asher LeOlat HaTamid, besides the morning burnt offering, which is offered as a continual Karban. Right, so the wording of the pasuk says that there's that the primary karban is a karban tamid, and then additionally on different days the karban tamid was offered twice a day, once in the morning, once in the afternoon, and in addition to those karbanot of the daily nature, you have the special musaf sacrifices. So, for instance, on Shabbos, you bring a Karban Musaf in addition to the Karban Tamid, in addition to the Karban that's brought on a continual, constant basis. And the Mishnah in Zvachim says that we learn from here that we might have thought, and this is a point that I like to make, I'll make it at the beginning and I'll make it at the end. We are accustomed to think that those things that are special, those things that occur infrequently, those things that occur once a year, are the things that are most important. And what the halachot concerning karbanot and the topic of this evening's learning is that from a Jewish perspective, the opposite is true. That consistency, that which we do day in, day out, takes a primary importance. And so that's why if you look at, and that's what's learned from this pasuk, that whatever other karban you're going to offer, if you're going to offer a karban musaf, if you're going to offer other karbanot in honor of special days, it is built, it's not instead of the daily, constant, continuous karban, it's in addition to. And what we'll see is that when there's a conflict, when there's a need to prioritize, what will win out in terms of a prioritization will be that which is tadir. Tadir in Hebrew is a Hebrew word which means constant or more continuous compared to the other value or korban or mitzvah or prayer or situation. And tonight is a mashup of various scenarios where you have a conflict between two mitzvot, between two situations, between two ideas, in one situation where you have to prioritize one over the other, and how do you do so? Which wins out? And oftentimes what we'll see is that that which is more tadir is that which wins out, that which is more consistent and constant. And that's what the Mishnah in Zvachim tells us. Kol ha-tadir mechavero, kodem et ha-chavero. Right, so all things being equal, that's going to be important because we're going to throw in another variable that confuses, that muddies the waters a little bit. But if all things are equal, like we're talking about karbanot that are of similar sanctity, similar importance, so the karban that comes first is the karban that is the more consistent, the more frequent karban that's offered. Right? Any offering that is more frequent than the other precedes that offering. And therefore, I switch to the English, Zvachim 89a, therefore the daily offerings precede the Musaf offerings, which are set because the daily offering, the Tamid, is offered every day, really twice a day, and the Musaf offerings are only offered on special days. And similarly, when Shabbat and Rosh Chodesh coincide, you're going to have to offer two Musaf offerings, two additional offerings. Which one comes first? So the answer is Shabbos comes first. The additional Shabbat offering precedes the additional Rosh Chodesh offering. And likewise, we know that there are two on Rosh Chodesh, which is Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is also Rosh Chodesh. So there's a special carbon for Rosh Hashanah. And there's also a carbon for Rosh Chodesh. Which one do you offer first? Well, Rosh Chodesh happens 12 times a year. Well, really more than that, because there's 2 days Rosh Chodesh certain times. Right? And Rosh Hashanah happens once a year. So we might think Rosh Hashanah is more special. We should do that first. The answer is no. Kol hatadir mechavero, kodem et chavero. Whatever is more frequent, what happens more often, that is what takes precedence, priority. The Rambam notes for us that there's another factor. The Gemara in Zvachim continues to throw a complexity into the equation. Those if we're dealing with karbonot, so the karbon that is more frequent is the karbon that is offered first. What if you have karbonot of varying degrees of sanctity, right? A karbon that is mekudosh mechavero. We know that if you in the morning, right after the morning brachot, there's a section of karbonot, and in that section of karbonot, there's a paragraph. There's a chapter of Mishnayot called Ezehu Mekomon Shel Zvachim. It talks about many of the karbonot that are offered. And different karbonot have a different degree of sanctity, as is evident from how many sprinklings of blood is required on the Mizbeach of that sacrifice, what's the duration of time you have to eat the sacrifice, if you're allowed to eat that sacrifice. So we know that there is a hierarchy of sanctity when it comes to karbonot. What if you have two karbonot that vary in terms of their sanctity? So the Mishnah doesn't use this language, but the poskim and the commentators use this language. Just as kol hatadir mechavero, kodem et chavero, the first words of the Mishnah in Zvachim, just as we said that which is more frequent is that which gets priority, so too kol hamekudash mechavero, kodem et chavero. We don't, that language is not in the Gemara, but it is in the Rambam, right? That anything that is, if we look at the third source, the Rambam and the laws of Tamidim, which are the laws of Karbanot, says, kol hatadir mechavero, kodem et chavero, which is a direct quote from the Mishnah above. The more frequent ritual, or specifically Karban in this case, is that which comes first. V'chein, kol hamekudosh mechavero, kodem et chavero. Also, all things being equal, but if we're dealing with karbonot, but one karbon is ranked as being more holy, right? As being more sanctified, that is the one that comes first, right? If you look in the Rambam, it's the third English line. I gave you just a snippet of the Hebrew and the entire halacha in the English. First, they would offer this is a quote from the Mishnah above, right? First, they would offer the additional offering for Shabbat, then the additional offering of the Rosh Chodesh, of the new moon, then the additional offering of the festival, especially Rosh Hashanah. The rationale is that any offering brought more frequently than another takes precedence over the other. Similarly, if an offering is on a higher level of holiness, referred to as Kol HaMekudosh Mechavero, than another one, the one that is more holy, takes precedence over it, right? So we have two equations. Frequency wins out, and sanctity wins out. But now you get to the finals, right? So what about frequency? One is more frequent, two karbonot. One is more frequent, one is more holy. One is tadir, one is mekudosh. So what happens there? You have a conflict of values. So what does the Rambam say? If one has a choice of an offering that is brought more frequently, last lines of that Rambam, and one which is on a higher level of holiness, one may award precedence to whichever one desires. To draw. Take your pick. There's reason to choose one or the other. Frequency is an important value. sanctity, higher levels of sanctity is an important value, but it doesn't. There's no clear winner. So in the case of korban, you have an option, opportunity to offer both these korbanot. You can offer either one that you'd like. Now, there seems to be an indication. Let's look at this next quote from a Talmud Yerushalmi, and I didn't have it easily available in English, so I'll translate it for you, and you tell me let's do it outside, and then you tell me, based on the factors that we've laid out, which of these values seems to have the upper hand in the priority in this case. This is that famous case where you have a high priest and a nazir, a Kohen Gadol and a nazir, walking down the road, both of whom are on an elevated, exalted status of sanctity, both of whom are not allowed to, under normal circumstances, contract spiritual impurity. They're not allowed to come into contact with the corpse or a dead body. And lo and behold, they're walking down the road and they find a corpse with no one to bury it. And now one of them has to contract tumah. One has to become tamei mit. So the Kohen Gadol and the Nazir, right? So the Gemara says that the Talmud Yerushalmi says Kohen Gadol and a Nazir sheitame Nazir val yitame Kohen Gadol. That if you have a Kohen Gadol and a Nazir, right, the Nazir is the one that contracts spiritual impurity. Let's think about it. If we're looking at the paradigm of one being more frequent and one being more holy, how does that match up here? Which one remains a status? Which one has an elevated status of kedusha? The Kohen Gadol or the Nazir? Well,
it's supposed to be equal. That's the reason why we have a Nazir.
No, but what about close relatives? What does a Kohen Gadol contract for tumah for a close relative? The answer is yes. Right, his parents, etc. A Nazir, not. So it is the Nazir is on a higher spiritual level from the perspective of contracting tumat mate, and therefore from that value the Nazir should not contract it, and the Kohen Gadol should. On the other hand, who is more frequently the status? A Nazir is
anybody,
but how long is it? A stam nazir is 30 days. 30 days, a shorter period of time, correct. The Kohen Gadol is more long. So which one wins out? So we say on the underlying lines, tadir umekudash, tadir kodem, that if you have this conflict between something which is ongoing and something which is on an elevated status, the frequency is that which wins out. Frequency is king. Constancy, consistency is that which wins out. So although the Rambam seems to say that it's a draw, the difference between tadir and mekudash, nonetheless, there seems to be indications elsewhere, for instance, this Gemara, this Talmud Yerushalmi and Nazir, that when there's a face-off between values of something which is elevated in sanctity versus something that is elevated because of its frequency, frequency is more important. And we have, there's a number of interesting derivations and permutations of this that we're going to go into. But first, let's try to define our terms of what it means to be mekudash. What exactly does it mean to be an elevated status of sanctity? Right. We've given one example, but is there a broader definition that can be applied in other circumstances? So, for instance, Rabbi Akiva Eger, in the third to last source, talks about a scenario of a conflict, or not really a conflict, but you have two obligations placed on a person, and the question is, which one does he or she fulfill first? Right. In this case, it's let's read it in the Hebrew. Achal davar, a person eats something. He didn't wash, but he eats something. He's obligated to make an after blessing, vasa trachav, and before he made the after blessing, the person went to the bathroom. So now they have an obligation to make a asher yatzar and an after blessing. So the Rebbe Akiva Eiger says mavarach tchila asher yatzar. First you say your asher yatzar, and then you say your after blessing. V'achrach bracha achrona. The Magen Avraham points out, this is a quote from the Magen Avraham. If you skip to the next line, the second word, v'imhito mayim kodim brachat hamazon, tzarech iyun im lo yakdim brachat hamazon shu midiraita. The question is, let's say you washed and made hamotzi, and you have to bench, and then you use the restroom, so now you have an obligation of asher yatzar, and you have an obligation of an after blessing of birkat hamazon. Why is that different? Well, we know, as we see, birkat hamazon has the potential of being a Torah obligation. It's one of the few Torah obligated blessings. If you eat and you're satisfied, you have to bench. You have to say birkat hamazon. It's one of achalta, savata, verachta, one of the few blessings that are mentioned in the Torah. So the question is, what happens if you have the obligation to recite two blessings, but these blessings are on different levels? Right? One's a Torah obligation to recite birkat hamazon after a sandwich, and the other is certainly an important bracha of asher yatzar, but it is a rabbinic institution. So which one do we say? Do we say that birkat hamazon comes first because it's somehow mikudash? It's elevated in sanctity because its obligation is of Torah origin. O dilma mikol makom tadir adif. Right? What do you say asher yatzar more frequently, or do you bench? Certainly, if you are off carbs. Certainly, if you're off carbs. But the assumption is that asher yatzar is more frequent. Even those people who would eat one or two bread meals a day, there'd be more opportunities for asher yatzar. And Rebbe Akiva Eiger suggests this is dependent on the discussion we had earlier in Zvachim, right? And in the Rambam, who talks about this tension, right? This face-off between that which is on an elevated status, mekudash, versus something that's on a more frequent status, tadir.
Don't you also have the loophole with benching that you have a certain amount of time, and about 70 minutes or...
So you're saying, so again, what we'll see is, that's why I preface by saying all things being equal. You're sort of hinting at the fact, let's say, if you did one blessing, you would lose the opportunity for the other blessing in some way, right? And that, so does that play a role? We're going to get to it. But we're assuming that all options are on the table and will continue to be on the table. The question is just precedence. Which one comes first? And so at the end, he quotes the Rambam, who says, in that case, yachol aktim is a shiurtze. You can, it's a dealer's choice. Now you can choose whatever you want to do, you can do, because both have a value. One is birkat hamazon has a value because it's of a Torah origin, and asher yatzar has a value, although it's of rabbinic origin, nonetheless, it's more frequent, it's tadir, and therefore you can choose either one that you like. But here we see that an expression of mekudash, of something being on an elevated status, according to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, is that its origin is of Torah origin, as opposed to many of the other brachot, which are of rabbinic origin. Here's another an interesting face-off. By the way, not everyone agrees to Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Some suggest that you can't really talk about mekudash, something being of an elevated status, when you're talking about Torah obligations versus rabbinic. That compared to Torah obligations, rabbinic are on a status of reshut. I'm not going to get into it. But Rabbi Akiva Eiger is an interesting approach and helps us concretize what the Rambam had mentioned before. Another face-off. Second to last source on side number one. Tefillin versus mezuzah. We know that both are written on a scroll, on a parchment. by a scribe in a specific fashion, and both both cost money, right? Let's say you can't afford both. Which one do you do? Now, purely from the perspective of frequency of tadir, we would. Which one is more tadir? Is mezuzah more tadir, more frequent, or is tefillin more tadir? Mezuzah, right? Because we know that tefillin, besides the fact that only men wear tefillin and women don't, but let's put that on the side. Let's talk about a man's obligation to buy tefillin versus to buy mezuzah. Mezuzah is obligated day and night. Mezuzah is obligated all 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Tefillin are not obligated at night, nor on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So, right, that too. But purely from the perspective of Tadir, for everyone, for men and women, it would seem that mezuzah wins out. However, look what the Shulchan Aruch says, if a person is not of financial means at that moment, is in need of both, and is not able to afford both, tefillin and mezuzah, yiknet tefillin. Right? If it's a man, obviously, he buys tefillin, velo mezuzah, not mezuzah. What happened to Tadir? What happened to our calculation? That frequency and consistency is that which wins out, is that which wins the day? The answer is, de mitzvah shehi chovat haguf adifa. Because tefillin, mezuzah, you put on your house, but tefillin, you put on your body, it is no longer, right? Remember we said, all things being equal. Right, so what has been decided is that there's a way of pushing tefillin up a status level by mere fact that it is something that we bind, that men bind onto their bodies, as opposed to something which you place on your door. It's a more intimate ritual, and as such, it gains a level of importance that otherwise would not be there, to the extent that it can override the more frequent mitzvah of or precede, let's say, it doesn't override, that's imprecise, it precedes the more frequent mitzvah of mezuzah. So we see that the notion that frequency takes precedence is only when the mitzvot are considered of the same caliber. And there are a number of different ways in which mitzvot can be prioritized or given greater importance or gravitas or standing, one of which is described in the Shulchan Aruch, chovat haguf versus a chova on that's a mitzvah ritual that's put on the body versus a ritual that is for here placed on the wall. Yes.
It's a couple. A young married couple doesn't have a lot of money.
Right.
And the husband needs children. Does the wife acquiesce and agree to...
Well, the question would become, whose money is it?
Well, it's joint.
It's joint. Right? That's a good question. It would seem... I don't know. It's hard to we're dealing with one person with two obligations. If you have two people with two obligations, that makes things a little bit more unclear, because then you have to weigh both of the factors.
So
we would hope. Yeah, but you're just avoiding it. But it's definitely a fair. It's definitely a fair question.
What about the fact that all our tefillot are in place of the korbanot?
Right.
Our tefillot are midrabanan.
And therefore?
I don't know.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see the order of tefillah is a tosfot and brachot that we're going to do. So we'll see where that plays out. Here's another situation. Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah. Three Torahs, always a favorite day of mine. So we read from three Torahs, the Parshat HaShavua, a seventh Aliyah from Rosh Chodesh, Pinchas, this week's parsha actually, and Chanukah you read from Parshat Naso during the Chanukah Hamizbeach, the dedication of the Mizbeach at the end of Parshat Naso. So the Magen Avraham here says that obviously the question is which what's the order of readings. Obviously Parshat HaShavuah comes first. The question then is, what comes next? So we quote the Shulchan Aruch that says, "Basheni from the second Torah, Korei Echad B'shal Rosh Chodesh." You read one Aliyah for Rosh Chodesh, and here the Magen Avraham says, "Detadir Kodem," that what is more frequent, the Rosh Chodesh reading or the Chanukah readings? Rosh Chodesh, right? There's more Rosh Chodesh readings than there are Chanukah readings, and that's why therefore it's more frequent. That formulation may come up into question, but let's deal with it for now. But the Magen Avraham continues and suggests, "Umaftir." What about the maftir? Right, you read the more typical maftir should be either the maftir of Rosh Chodesh, which is normally the way we do it. When there's a Rosh Chodesh on Shabbos, you read the maftir, the haftorah, for Rosh Chodesh. So what about here? So here the Magen Avraham says, even though we give priority to the Torah reading for Rosh Chodesh, when it comes time to read the haftorah, the selection from the prophets, we choose the one that is more related to Chanukah. Right? So Chanukah wins out. And why? So the Magen Avraham gives us another rule to utilize when we're trying to figure out the rankings in these matchups, right? Because when we say Tahadit Tadir Kodem, when we say that frequency takes priority, takes precedence, Hainu Lahakdim Avalidchot Pursume Nisa Adif. When we talk about frequency taking precedence, it's specifically precedence, meaning when the other one will be read or the other value will be expressed. Not when the other value will be displaced, right? You can only, in the case of the Torah readings, the question is which one comes second, but the other one will be read third, right? So Rosh Chodesh comes first because Chanukah can then be read third. Second, Rosh Chodesh can be second because Chanukah can then be read third. But in the case of the Maftir, the case of the Haftorah, the section of Navi, you're only going to read one. And you're not going to read the other. So when we talk about Tadir being Kodem, frequency takes priority. Priority means the other one is going to find expression. If it's not going to find expression, then the rule is not applicable. And therefore, there are other factors that will go into which Haftorah is being read. One of the factors is Chanukah has this very great emphasis placed on Pirsumei Nisa. Right, publicizing the miracle of Chanukah, publicizing God's role in the world, but especially during that Greek period, right, and that will be the deciding factor in which Haftorah is read. We no longer work with frequency; we work with Pirsumei Nisa. Why are we not applying the rule? Because the rule only applies when that which loses out to frequency is going to find expression. And here, it's not going to find expression. You're going to read both the Rosh Chodesh reading and the Chanukah reading. You're only going to read one Haftorah, and therefore, the whole factor of Tadir, of frequency, is no longer the only consideration, or even the primary consideration, or the consideration that wins out. Another place where this comes up, if you look on side 2 of the source sheet, is talis and tefillin. Right? For men are obligated to pray weekdays with talis and tefillin in the mornings. And the question is, which one do you put on first? Right? So we already said that tefillin has a Tefillin is less frequent than talis, right? You wear a man wears a talis on Shabbos and Yom Tov. He doesn't wear tefillin. But we already saw, right, that maybe tefillin has an added value to it because you wrap it on your body. Well, talus also you wrap on your body, but the Gemara doesn't talk about talus in that way. But we see that it actually plays out the way we would have expected, right? So you see on the top of page 2, achar shalavash talit mitzuyatz yaniach tefillin. That first you put on a talus, and then you put on tefillin, right? And that makes sense based on what we know. Based on what we know that tadir v'sheinu tadir, talus is worn every day, tefillin is worn almost every day, all weekdays, and therefore talus first. The Ramah adds a caveat, an important factor to keep in mind, that tadir v'sheinu tadir, that frequency takes priority when the other mitzvah or korban or ritual is available at the same time, when both are available at the same time. However, what if you have tefillin in front of you and he doesn't have his talus? Does he have to wait for his talus in order to put on tefillin? So there we say no. Right? Because again, the matchup where frequency wins out is where, all things being equal, part of that equality is that they're both in front of you. And that's what the Ramah says. The notes, Ramoshe Isserlis, the notes on the Shulchan Aruch, says, Miu in tefillin mezumanin biyado. If you have tefillin and ready on hand, vein lo tzitzit, and you don't have a talus, ein sarech lahamtin al tzitzis. You don't wait for your talus. Ela miniach tefillin ukeshemivin talus ma'atvo. Put on your tefillin, and when talus becomes available, you wear your talus. So here's another factor as we paint the picture of what it really means that frequency wins out. Again, it's in broad strokes, all things being equal. But the detail here is that if the frequent item or ritual is not available at the same time as the less frequent one is, we don't delay. We put on the tefillin. So even if it means putting on the talus a little bit later, even if the talus is considered the more frequent of the mitzvot. another situation where this comes up is on Sukkos. On Sukkos, when it comes to shaking the mitzvah of lulav. The mitzvah of lulav compared to the mitzvah of prayer. Which one is more frequent? Prayer. Prayer is every day, every day. Lulav is 7 days, and that's reflected in the Shulchan Aruch when we say the second source on the side too, Shacharit, in the morning, Achar Chazarat Tfila, after the Chazan's repetition of the Amida, Notlin Alulav Mavarchin. That's when you take the lulav, you make the bracha on it, and you shake it. You say Al Netilat Lulav on the first day, the first time you take it that year, you say Shechianu. And then Gomri Mahalel, and then you say full Hallel every day of Sukkot. It's also convenient because we know that Hallel should be recited with your lulav and etrog, right? So the timing is correct, and it's and thematically it works. The timing is correct because tefillah prayer is more frequent, and frequency takes priority. So you should pray first. Then you take your lulav. Prayer, essential prayer is Shmoneh Esrei, and when you're in a minyan, it's the repetition of the Amida, Shmoneh Esrei as well. And then you take the lulav at the first available moment after Tefillah, and that leads us right into Hallel when we're supposed to shake the lulav and etrog anyway, right? So it kind of works out, kind of makes sense. There is a practice to ignore frequency and to take lulav and esrog at an earlier moment, before davening, right? And this is reflected, the Bikurei Yaakov, which is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, on this halacha, points out that already the Bach, who was precedes the Shulchan Aruch, he comments on the tour, he says, even though the other mitzvot on other holidays take place after prayers, after davening. But Sukkot, Mashkimin, or even if normally on Yom Tov you would daven a little later, on Sukkot you would daven, get up early. Mishum Zrizin Magdimin LeMitzvat Lulav. There's this idea that I've given Shir on in the past. Zrizut tells us to do the mitzvah at its earliest moment. Right? That's why brises, circumcisions, are generally in the Orthodox world in the morning. Right? It's not invalid to do it in the afternoon, so long as it's during the day. But typically, people do it in the morning. Some people are very careful to do it at the first minyan possible. Right? You got to get up the baby and the mother early in the morning, right? But most people, it's most common to have it in the morning because of Zrizin Magdimin LeMitzvot. We know that Avraham, when he went to offer his son Yitzchak in Akedat Yitzchak, the binding of Isaac, got up early in the morning. Vayashkem Avraham Baboker. So when we enter into the covenant of Abraham, our child, we also do it early in the morning. And the Bikur Yaakov says that applies to other mitzvot as well, including the mitzvah of lulav. V'lachein, and therefore, ma shenoagin anshe maisa, li tolulav b'shachrit kodam alicha l'beit ha-kneset, b'sukkah min ha-kashirhu. So he's defending the practice of some to make the bracha lulav and etrog in their sukkah before they leave for shul. Because of the idea of zrizut, to do the mitzvah that in this case before, and ignore the fact that it's less frequent than prayer. And he says that it's a min ha-kasher, it's a viable and respectable custom. Lo bilva mi'atam da'al pi ha-kabbalah li tolulav b'sukkah. Because there's a couple of factors going on here. Number one, there was a Kabbalistic idea of connecting the mitzvah of lulav with the mitzvah of sukkah. And unlike us here in Hollywood, most shuls didn't have a sukkah. It was people's homes that had a sukkah. There are locations, my brother lives in Manhattan, most shuls have a sukkah and most people don't have a sukkah. But historically, most people had a sukkah, most shuls did not have a sukkah. So if you wanted to shake lulav and etrog and fulfill this Kabbalistic hiddur on the mitzvah to do it in the sukkah with your lulav and etrog, you'd have to do it at home. But he says beyond that, there's also the fact that el gam kein mitam zrizin makdimin lemitzvah, but also because of this idea that there's a value in getting up early, right, and wanting to do the mitzvah at its earliest time possible. So here too we see that on a basic level, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the halacha that tadir v'sheinu tadir, tadir kodem. You have prayer, you have the mitzvah of lulav. The mitzvah of lulav will take priority because they're both in front of you. They're of equal stature. Do the mitzvah of tefillah first. But then the commentary tells us that the other way may also be legitimate because of these other factors. I wonder if the fact that we have a sukkah on premises, so you can do it after tefillah, before halal, although it's going to be a problem now because the door that everyone liked to use is now for emergency exit only. We're going to have to go back to the Bikurei Yaakov. And if you want to, you can go all the way around, but anyway, lots of... So here too, we're being consistent, but with a caveat. The consistency is that frequency wins out. The caveat being, unless there's another factor to consider when it comes to the less frequent mitzvah. Another factor to consider, Rav Moshe Feinstein was actually did not subscribe to the Bikurei Yaakov and felt strongly that since tefillah, prayer, is the more frequent of mitzvot, then that should come before lulav. And Rav Asher Weiss in an article points out that it's true that prayer is an obligation that's more frequent. But if you're going to a minyan, right? Let's say you go to 9 o'clock minyan on Sukkot morning here at Young Israel. and you wake up at 7:30. So even though technically there's an obligation of prayer at that moment, you're not praying. You're not praying till 9 o'clock, right? So do we say that the minute you wake up, you have to daven, even if it means not going to a minyan? No, we know that a minyan praying with a tzibur, with a congregation, has a value. And we almost view it as if right now, you don't have to pray. You woke up, you say moda'ani, right? You say some of those early things, but you don't have to say everything. You wait until you get to your minyan. By the way, this also applies in other situations. There's an idea that you're not supposed to eat until you daven Maariv. Let's say you always daven Maariv at 10 o'clock. Do you have to wait till 10:30 to eat dinner every night? So the poskim say, no, that's your davening time, right? And before that, it's okay. The same thing is true here, that one could suggest if you're always going to a certain minyan, then you can shake your lulav earlier, and there's no conflict. It's similar to the idea in theory of where you don't have your talis in front of you, right? You don't have your minyan yet. It's 8 o'clock. You go to 9 o'clock, whatever the case is. So it's like not having the two mitzvot in front of you at the same time. Then of course you can choose whichever one you want. You could shake the lulav at an earlier point. I wanted to do this Tosfot and Brachot. It was mentioned before, Karbanot, in the absence of Karbanot, we now have Tefillah. So will this find expression when it comes to Tefillah? And here in the Tosfot, in Brachot, it actually does. I gave it to you in English, care of Safaria. The halacha is that a person recites the afternoon prayer first and the additional prayer thereafter. The halacha would be, let's say it's Shabbos afternoon, and you realize you haven't davened Musaf. You need to daven Musaf, but it's also Mincha time. So which one do you daven first? Right? So we know, especially since they correspond to Karbanah, right? So the Mincha corresponds to Tamid, and the Musaf corresponds to Musaf. So we saw that's the first source we have. Tamid comes first. So Mincha comes before Musaf. In general, we don't have that. Generally, that's what we do, right? First we daven Shacharit, then we daven Musaf. But we daven Musaf at a time, right, that it's not yet time for Mincha yet. If it's not time for Mincha yet, then of course you daven Musaf, and then you daven Mincha when it's time for it. Right, so let's skip to the bolded words on the fifth line, last word. From here we learn that on Yom Kippur we should be careful to complete praying the Shacharit prayer before 6.5 hours of the day have gone by, which is before the time to pray Mincha. For if one is not careful to start Musaf before 6.5 hours, we will be required to pray Mincha before Musaf. Right? So what we see here, the halacha would be, according to this first opinion in Tosfot, right, we start, there's an early minyan, but most of our minyanim start at 9 o'clock on Yom Kippur, because where's everyone going, right? There's no lunch, you're fasting and in prayer till the end of the day. So you get a later start, that's fine. So it's 9 o'clock, and things take a while. Let's say you don't start Musaf. Well, we always start Musaf before the time for Mincha. But let's say you didn't. Let's say it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's just time to, you're just starting Musaf. Right? So the Tosfot would say that you'd have to daven Mincha first. Because it's time for Mincha, and it's time for Musaf. But Mincha takes precedence over Musaf when it comes to that time period. What was that?
It's in front of you. It's ready to happen right now. So
right, both of them are in front of you. You can choose either one, but
it's more in front of you. It's ready to happen.
No, but right, but not, but the Mincha corresponds to the more frequent sacrifice. And therefore it has to be done first. And then you can do the Musaf afterwards. However, if you skip down to the next piece, and the Ri says that it is not necessary to pray Mincha prayers 6.5 hours on Yom Kippur before the Musaf prayer, for that which was said, that one must pray the Mincha prayer earlier, That is when one has to take care of his needs and will not be able to pray the mincha prayer at its time, and must therefore pray both prayers now. Again, if the time for mincha has come, and if it's now or never.
It's not now or never.
Exactly, that's what the Rish says. It's not now or never. But if it was now or never, then you have to pray mincha first and then get on to musaf. But if in shul, it's not now or never. We're going to get to mincha, don't worry. Later on in the afternoon, I assure you, mincha's on the schedule. Right? And you're not going to a party. You're not going to forget to daven mincha on Yom Kippur. Just stay in your seat. Come at the assigned times, and you'll be sure to catch all the prayer services necessary for the day, right? Then it's not a problem. But it's an interesting theoretical that this idea of frequency goes so far as to suggest that we rearrange the order of prayers on Yom Kippur to be consistent with the value that frequency takes priority. We ultimately reject it for different reasons, but that's the extent to which we consider frequency to be of a primary importance. Just to end, without giving sources, there are two other scenarios where tadir kodem, frequency, plays a role in determining how we conduct ourselves, also in the realm of prayers and blessings. This seems to be the most emblematic scenarios where we deal with frequency being of primary importance is in the realm of karbanot, which we started with, which manifests itself today in the realm of prayers, of tefillah, and also in terms of brachot, which we saw a number of, with one or two instances we saw of mitzvot, tefillin and talis, tefillah and lulav, that's what we've seen so far. So an interesting question comes up a couple months from now, when it's Rosh Chodesh Elul, and you start saying LeDavid at the end of Shacharit and Maariv, and you also at the end of Shacharit say the special chapter of Tehillim for Rosh Chodesh, right? Baruch Nafshi. The question is, which one comes first? What was that? Why?
Because you're saying it.
Okay, the Davar Hashem already said Rosh Hashanah to Shmini Atzeret. Yeah, lot 80 times, and Baruch Hinafshi has said 18 times. Right? Interesting question is asked. How do we view what is the definition of Tadir? Does it mean quantity or frequency over the course of the year?
Oh.
Right, so that is an interesting curveball. That's so the Mata Ephraim, for instance, says you say Baruch Hinafshi first, and then you say LeDavid, because you say Baruch Hinafshi all year long, and you say LeDavid less than 2 months in a concentrated fashion, but less than 2 months. Others disagree. The Shagas Aryeh seems to say otherwise. That Tadir is quantity. Whatever you say most, that's what is considered Tadir. But the Mata Ephraim, at least in this case, says what's considered Tadir is not what you do more times, but that which you do more consistently. Right? Is it quantity or consistency? And consistency over the course of the year, Baruch Hinafshi is more consistent. Right? I mean, that's... By the way, that's true in a lot of areas, right? If you, it's the difference between starvation dieting or eating right for months on end, or going on a binge of exercise versus doing a little bit of exercise for the long haul, right? I understand the Mata Ephraim. I can understand why. By the way, there's another factor. Just to be honest, we like to do LeDavid at the end, because it plays into shofar, right? And whether you blow shofar and say LeDavid, or say LeDavid and blow shofar, you want the shofar to be at the end, so you have LeDavid at the end anyway. But it's an interesting point. What does Tadir mean? What's frequency? is frequency the grand total, the total number of times you do something in a year, or is it the consistency of that act over the course of the year? And the last case is something I spoke about on Pesach, Yaknahaz. Yaknahaz is when Shabbos goes into Shabbos goes into Yontif. Did I get it right? Yes. No. When Shabbos goes into Yontif, right? It's Shabbos and then it's Yontif. It's Saturday night, and you're making Avdalah on Shabbos, and you're making Kiddush on Yontif.
So Motzei Shabbos is the first night of Yontif.
No, it's the it could be the first or the second. It could be the first or the second.
Right.
Because you have to make Havdalah, because Shabbos is a different level than Yom Tov. So you need to make some form of Havdalah, but you also have to make Kiddush. So what's the order of those operations? So one of the way we do it is Yaknahaz, Yayin, Bori Pri Hagafen, Kiddush, Mekadesh Yisrael, Vazmanim, right? Or Mekadesh Yisrael V'yom, whatever it is. And then you move on to elements of Havdalah, Ner, is the Nun, Hey is Havdalah, and finally you go back to the Yontif element, Zman, Shachianu. Shachianu is obviously on the Kiddush, not on the Havdalah. We don't make Shachianu on Havdalah. So one of the, there's a Machloket, Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, is the first bracha you make on Yayin, or is the first bracha you make on Kiddush? Right, so we do Yaknahaz, we ultimately hold like Beit Hillel, and part of the reason why we do so is because Yayin, the bracha on Yayin is applicable every day, right? If you listen to the news, you should drink a glass of wine every day, right? Red wine every day, a little bit of chocolate, a little bit of red wine. That's what they say this week. Let's see what they say next week. But Yayin is a bracha that's applicable every day. Kiddush is a bracha that's only applicable sometimes. So that's the tadir. That's the more frequent bracha is Yayin, and therefore Yayin is the first bracha in Yaknahaz. And so I would just end with where we began. That this idea that Tadir Kodem, that this idea that frequency is that which is most important, it takes precedence, takes priority, except when it doesn't. And I hope you've enjoyed our little scenarios of when it doesn't take priority and why that might be. But fundamentally, frequency, consistency, constancy in our lives is what Halacha finds to be most admirable, is what Halacha finds to be most important, and what wins out over any special, unique situation. Unique situations are great, they're fun, they're memorable, but Tadir Kodem, that which is frequent and consistent and constant, is what is most admirable and wins out in these scenarios.